Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, tgstore.co.uk.
The home of Gore Bikewear, Gore Running Wear and Aquasphere wetsuits. You can get 10% off with the code OXYGENADDICT10. And you can win a Gore bike or a Gore run jacket at tgstore.co.uk/OXYGENADDICT.
Cool. Team Oxygen Addict.
Event-specific training plans, coaching guidance from Coach Rob Wilby.
That's me.
And supportive teammates in a private Facebook group.
It's like we've rehearsed this, isn't it?
Never.
And Triathlon X.
The world's toughest iron distance race. And you can get £100 discount on your entry fee with the code OXYGEN100.
Only 5 places left, so be quick if you are crazy enough to enter. And welcome, Helen. How are you, my friend? Are the legs a little bit sore after the weekend?
How could you guess?
We perhaps going down the stairs on our bottom?
No, not quite that bad.
Not quite that bad, but still.
I can feel them a little bit, but I've had them worse.
Well, it's only when we're recording, it's Monday night now, so it's only 24 hours, isn't it? A hard half marathon will probably be the gift that keeps giving right the way through till this time tomorrow.
Yay.
So I'm fully expecting a text from you at lunchtime tomorrow saying, I'm in the lift to get out of bed.
Well, the choice today was, do I walk one way to the tram stop or do I walk the other way to this tram stop, which has a flight of stairs? And I was like, no, I'm going to the flat tram stop.
You know, it would be great. You know, there's adverts in the back of the Daily Mail for like little winch things that help elderly people out of the bath. You could get those set up over your bed. Iron Man could brand them for like post-race recovery.
That's such a good idea. Did I tell you that the first time I did the London Marathon, my mum genuinely had to lift my legs into the bath for me because I just couldn't move them? I'm not that bad anymore.
I remember at the end of the Vitruvian one year begging the woman in the cafe if she had some ice I could put on my thighs because I was in such a state, and she came out with a huge 2 kilo bag of frozen chips. I'd have to like sit in there with them on my thighs for an hour. I gave them back and I swear I saw her go back in and put them back in the freezer.
Nice. That's minging.
So I might steer away from the chips if I was you the next time you're racing down at Rutland Water.
They might have been near Rob Wilby's legs. Ew.
Yeah. Hairy chips for two, please.
That's fine.
Oh boy. Yeah. Bit of a good weekend for the old triathlon action. It was exciting, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. It was very, very exciting. Do you mean like Super League stuff, Rob, in general? Because
that was great. Super League stuff. It was great. Come on, let's do our results and give a shout out to our sponsor, tgstore.co.uk, who Hels has already mentioned. You get 10% off with the code OXYGENADDICT10, and you can enter a competition to win a bike jacket or run jacket of your choice at tgstore.co.uk/OXYGENADDICT. And we've got to be honest, Hels, there is no better rain jacket than a Gore rain jacket, is there?
There is no better rain jacket than a Gore rain jacket. Yeah, there you go.
My Gore jacket has been hammered this week. It's like my second skin. I've loved it. And it's great because you go, it's raining and I'm going out anyway. You put a woolly hat on, put the Gore running jacket on, get the Gore-Tex on, out the door, everything's groovy.
Oh,
the only thing that could make it sweeter is I've had Gore-Tex trainers.
Yes, I did once have a pair of Gore-Tex trainers.
Yeah, me too, and I can't tell you for the life of me why I haven't bought another pair, because they were bloody great. Now, having wet feet's awesome in the winter.
Yeah,
Why have we not bought another pair? Well, not between us, because obviously you could sleep in my shoes, couldn't you? Like the old woman in the shoe. But why have we not, having bought a pair each and had that discussion last winter how good they are, how have we not done it again?
I don't know. You know what? I probably could get a similar pair for, you know, half the price in a really bright colour. So that's probably,
they're probably not half the price, though. They're probably like £20 cheaper, aren't they?
Maybe.
So you'd have dry feet for the whole winter, the price for 20. We're idiots. I'm going online straight after this and I'm finding some Gore-Tex.
Mine were very good for trail running, a pair of Gore-Tex trail running shoes. Yeah, I really liked them.
Yeah, man.
Rated them highly. I think I got rid of them because they genuinely stank.
Yes,
that's always a good way.
All your shoes do, though, with respect, Hels.
No.
Is that a disrespectful thing to say? It's true, though, probably, isn't it?
Well, you see, probably. You don't have factually correct information there, do you?
I can text Rich. I can find out.
Anyway, should we move on,
Rob? Anyway, we should move on from singing the delights of Gore-Tex. If you haven't got a Gore-Tex jacket, go and buy one and do yourself a favour by getting it from tgstore.co.uk. And with that, let's move swiftly over to Hamilton Island, which was promised to be tropical paradise. And it did, in fact, look like a tropical paradise, didn't it?
Yep.
On the things. But, you know, when I hear tropical paradise, Hells, if I go on holiday to a place like that and it rains on me, I feel a bit shortchanged.
Yeah, totally.
And it was like an ice rink, wasn't it? That bike course in the rain.
On day three. So they had basically 2 days of... Oh, beautiful, beautiful weather, and you're thinking, oh, I want to be there right now. And then the third day, so Sunday morning, wasn't it, UK time watching, the heavens had absolutely opened, and the surface just looked mental. And the fact that this course was so short and sharp and bendy and twisty and turny, you just sort of think, how more of them did not fly off the bike?
Yeah.
I do not know. I honestly don't know, because there was a white line across, sort of at the end of transition and before they had to climb back up this hill. And you can see a few wheels went, and you're just thinking, wow, they have incredible bike handling skills for it not to have been worse.
Yeah, totally. And you can see how the idea of having it in Hamilton Island to promote the area worked so well, because the footage of the place was just... It's just beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It beats I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, doesn't it?
Maybe there's a crossover. Celebrity Super League Triathlon. Come on, Macca, that's what we want to see. Get Chris Moyles doing it.
Oh, it was just stunning. And because it was so fast and the different legs were so short, it just really kept your focus, didn't it, on it? And it was really cool to watch. And
with
the swims and stuff like that, absolutely highlighted how good a swimmer Richard Varga is, because he was still putting, you know, a good comfortable
He had several body lengths, didn't he, after 100 meters?
You just like, think, wow,
he is absolutely phenomenal.
So that was really cool to see. And then I think it was really, really interesting to see, okay, I know he wasn't particularly well, but Ali Brownlee not being at that front on day one and actually struggling a little bit, and by day three he had pulled out. But even Gomez, you know, it wasn't the Gomez show.
Yeah, that was very interesting, wasn't it? That it really was a kind of, you got this sense that people were thinking, what the hell's going on? Like all the lesser known athletes got the chance to show their ability over a shorter distance and really took it to the big names. There was no fear there, was there at all?
No.
People were just like gunning for, they had nothing to lose and they were just going for it, which I think works brilliantly.
And it was also very telling that, you know, the likes of Brent McMahon and Terenzo Bozzoni and the longer course guys on the Eliminator, they were, you know, one of the first bunch to actually not make the next round, weren't they?
Yeah.
So that was
it's just
very
that lack
telling.
Of the little bit of top end speed, isn't it?
Totally. And then, for me, Rob, obviously Richard Murray was amazing to watch, and the tactical genius of him, you could just see him, like he knew he had the game plan completely. He knew exactly what he had to do. He was counting all the athletes.
Yeah, it looked at a point, didn't it, like he was either on leg one or leg two.
Yeah.
He was kind of counting people with his finger as they were running around the turnaround.
Yeah.
So very clever. And you got to say as well, what a nice payday. $100,000 for a weekend's racing in sort of early March.
Yeah. Brilliant, wasn't it?
And I think that's probably as much as you get to win Kona still. Maybe they've upped the prize money a little bit, but it's not much less than winning Kona. When you think that's a whole... Well, to win Kona, to get all the bits of the puzzle in the right place can be years and years and years worth of work, can't it?
Yeah.
From a professional's point of view, there's a massive draw to be at this event, and I think there isn't that draw anymore to go and have to race Ironman at the end of your career, because you can race this kind of distance and make really good money at the beginning of your career.
Yeah. That is a very, very interesting point. Because I'm sure, Rob, it's $100,000 in Aussie dollars. rather than US dollars. But, you know, still, as you say, that is still a decent, decent...
Do you think it'd be Australian dollars?
I really thought it was. I must have read it somewhere.
I always just assumed that, like, the currency of prize money was US dollars, but you might be right. You might well be.
Don't know. I'm gonna tell you. But the person who really stuck out for me was Jake Birtwistle, the Australian.
So you were texting about him. You liked him, didn't you?
Did I text about him?
Yeah.
Did I? Yeah, I did. Well, anyway.
Or you emailed me.
That's something. People have been essentially saying the gold medal is his in Tokyo. He's like, I was doing a little bit of research earlier, Rob. He's like an 11-time Australian schools running champion. So he was like under 18, 3,000 metre champion, under 18, 1,500 metre champion. He was the world schools cross-country champion. So his running pedigree is just...
Yeah.
Right up there. And then he made the switch into triathlon. In 2013, he was the under 23 Aussie sprint tri champion. He's been the under 23 world champion. And then he didn't make the Australian Olympic team for Rio, just missed out on that one. But last year, he finished the World Triathlon Series 13th overall. He got second place in Hamburg. So, like, he really is one. And then you saw him over the weekend in the Super League. He absolutely is one to watch.
Yeah.
And he's still only, 22, 23?
I tell you what, that reminds me. We've not got this in the notes, but I was reading earlier today. Ben Dykstra.
Yes.
Won the English schools cross country.
He did, yeah.
This weekend. So it's like four times in a row, I think, for him to win that. So he's still at school, which I couldn't believe. We've been hearing about him for so long. I assumed he was like 20 or something.
No, but he's still really young, isn't he? Isn't he the two times Youth Olympic Games champion or something like that? Yeah.
So he's one where you think, with that kind of run pedigree, to win the English schools cross country,
yeah,
you know, you are a red hot runner. You are of that caliber. And so he could move up to do the Super League type stuff,
yeah,
and be in the mix in the running for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really cool, isn't it? Because that was the other thing. It really did give the younger athletes a chance to shine and a chance to, you know, go, right, I'm just going to give it. I've got nothing to lose here.
Yeah. Hey, here's a question. I wonder how you actually get into it. A kid like Ben Dykstra.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like someone like him who's got the natural talent and arguably could get right in there and shake things up on the run. But how would they ever hear about him, I suppose?
Get on Macca's wild card. Radar. Yeah, wild card.
Come on, Macca. We need to talk. We need to get you on. You need to get your Google Calendar set up, Macca, so that you've got the dates and the right time.
I think he might have been a bit busy, Rob, but maybe over the next few weeks.
Yeah, bless him. We nearly got him on twice. We nearly had it, and then we kept getting the time zones mixed up. So maybe we'll get him on. Maybe he'll have a bit of time to chill out now that this has all gone by.
Yes, hopefully.
Hey, maybe we could lobby him to get Ben Dykstra in.
You could try. I think, first of all, you've got to speak to him.
Actually get him on the phone. Yeah. It's going to happen. It will happen. I'll keep working on it. Everyone who's listening, tweet Macca and say, oi, sort out your Google Calendar, get on OA Tri Podcast. I'd love to talk to him, man.
Oh,
he's one of my all-time triathlon. I just think he's brilliant.
Well, watch this space. But Rob, what I was going to say is that for me, clearly, the thing that was missing from the Super League Triathlon this time was a women's event. No, I can cope without cake. The women's event. And I think it was a real shame that they didn't have a women's event as well. And what will be very, it'll be good to see how they make it work, because in terms of broadcast times and programmes, obviously it was rammed. So quite how they will manage to edit everything and get the women's race in there as well and still show both the men's and women's race to, you know, the best of their abilities, that'll be a nice interesting one for the
well, maybe it'll work stuff. Maybe it'll work back to back, you know, they have the race where they had the 10 minutes in between.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they could have the women go as the men finish.
And then you miss out on the little things like, recaps, and you miss out on the, even if they were 30-second interviews with, you know, a Richard Murray or something, by that point they still only had about 7 minutes left to recover.
They could do it as like, they could do it like a little inlet in the corner of the screen as each one's, that would add to it, I reckon, because they do that in athletics, don't they? You get a little interview while the 10,000 meters is on or whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
I know what you mean though. It's,
no, it will be, it will be,
do you know what though, having seen how they've organized it, I think they put a little bit of thought to it. They could have it going man woman in the time trial. They could, they could really integrate it and make it really, really mesh well together, I reckon, for sure.
It'd be cool. Food for thought, I tell you.
Yeah.
On the whole thing.
They need you there, Helen. They need you as, like,
wow, you know,
female ambassador and consultant to help sort it out.
There'd be worse things, wouldn't there?
I'll ask Macca.
Okay, so good. Excellent.
We need, we need a pair of us flying over to Thailand to discuss this. We've got some ideas.
Oh, love it. So, Rob, overall, though, Richard Murray was the overall winner, wasn't he? So he got the $100,000 prize. And then Mario Mola was second, wasn't he, overall? And then Jake Birtwistle third overall. I think I've got that right.
I have completely mislaid my result sheets. Let's see, overall, no, I can't find it. Let's say you're right.
Yeah, no, I am right. There you go.
Well done.
Thanks.
Yeah, I think that's happened there. Sorry.
No,
had
that's
it all
okay.
And it's all gone off the screen.
That is absolutely fine. So yeah, Super League, brilliant. And there's still a whole load of highlights that you can go and watch up on the Super League YouTube channel. So
yeah, definitely get on that and go and check it out if you've not seen it. Yeah, that's a great idea.
It's good, turbo fodder as well, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah. Be perfect for the turbo. You'd be super inspired, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Totally. Shall we go over to Mexico, Rob?
To Mexico.
Sí, to Mexico. So it was Campeche, which was a new 70.3 race in Mexico, where we've already said before that triathlon's pretty massive out there. And yeah, there was a nice little win for Tim Don, who he's been working very closely, Rob, with Mr. Matt Bottrell on his cycling.
It's out of the bag and we can finally talk about it officially.
Yeah,
because I've known about this for a while. Yeah, so I think you'll see, if you see a picture of Tim on his bike and then you see a picture of Matt or any of his riders on the bike, it's obvious that Tim's been working with Matt and his position is amazing. And he's always had a massive engine, and I think he's got this tiny marginal gain now. That, what did he put into the rest of the field? Was it 6 minutes on the bike during this race?
Yes, I think it was. Four minutes.
4 minutes quicker than anybody else. So yeah, it's obviously paying off. Matt's coaching and training sessions, I'm sure, will be part of it. And his position is another piece of the puzzle as well. So it'll be great to see how Tim goes on this year and whether he continues with these successes, I think. Yeah. See whether Tim can help Matt with his swimming.
That would be, yeah, that would definitely be quite cool, wouldn't it? I saw a tweet from Matt Bottrell, something along the lines of how much he and Julie Dibbins had been, get in, try the Don, we've put him through hell at Julie Dibbins, because that's his coach as well, isn't it? But what a result. Hashtag yeah, winner, hashtag hark, hard work pays off.
Good stuff. So Tim takes out in 3:52 from Cody Beals of Canada in second, 3:56, and Trevor Wertel from Canada in 3:57.
Yeah.
Over in the ladies' race.
Yeah, in the women's race, Heather Wertel won it. Cecilia Perez of Mexico was second. Alison Linnell of the USA was third, and Leander Cave finished in sixth place and said something along the lines of, "She rode the struggle bus."
Like, not a bad result though, still top 10 still. Hey, good result for Team Wertel for the weekend, two on the podium.
Nice, isn't it?
Nice little payday.
Yeah, that'd be quite nice, both got on the podium. It's cool.
Good stuff. Right, should we jump over to Coach's Couch?
Yep, let's do this. This is sponsored by Team Oxygen Addict.
Yeah, team's closed at the moment, but you can go over and check out the information there at team.oxygenaddict.com. We're going to be opening it up in the next couple of weeks if people want coaching through the summer. So go and check it out. We're not exactly sure of the date yet, but it's definitely going to be within the next couple of weeks. So any distance from sprint distance through to Ironman, if you're interested in coach-guided training plans, go over and check it out and fire us an email if you've got any questions. So let's see what question we've got this week, Hels.
Yeah, so we had quite a few in, so thank you very much for all your questions to at OA Try Podcast on Twitter. Do keep them coming because we like getting them. But this week
it went a bit crazy, didn't it? This week, yeah, we had loads in.
Well, we will come to them over the next few weeks.
Loving the interaction.
Neil Feakins got in touch and he says, as a mid-pack swimmer and after a winter totally off swimming, I set myself a target of 50k in the pool in February. Initially, I was working hard to swim 2 minutes per 100. By the end of the month, I was swimming 1:45 per 100 for some long sets. To keep bringing my swim time down, can I just focus on swim fitness? Basically, is it just time in the pool that I need?
Oh, wow. There's a lot of information there in one little sentence there, isn't there? Wow, 50K in February, first up, after not swimming through the winter. Imagine that, Hels. Imagine swimming 50K. What does that break down to?
Have I even done that in a year?
12K a week. So three swims of 4K, four swims of 3K. When you say it like that, it doesn't sound a lot, but 50K does sound like a lot, doesn't it?
I think for the... we've used the phrase before, for the time-crunched age grouper.
Yes.
Then, yeah, it seems like a lot.
Yeah. And I think part of the backstory here, Neil said he spent the winter focusing on ultra running, so he spent all his time then training for running, and obviously he switched his focus now. So the first thing I think to point out is to go from swimming 2-minute hundreds to 1:45 hundreds is like a step change in your swimming. And it's obvious he's got a massive payback from swimming 50K in a month, isn't it? To get down to 1:45s is, you know, probably going from back of the middle of the pack to front of the middle of the pack with a 1:45 swim. So that's clearly working for him. And I guess the question really is always, have you got the time to spend doing swimming? Because we've always said, if you've got loads of time to swim and you really enjoy swimming and you've got a half decent stroke and you've got someone that you're working with and you can work on improving your stroke as well, then yes, there's no question that doing more swimming is going to help you. I think the question really is whether it's the most effective and the most efficient way of improving. And I think probably at that level of the 2-minute swimmer, I think it's probably not the most effective use of your time, regardless of how much time you've got, because someone who's really fit and who's swimming 2-minute hundreds has almost definitely, or in fact, I'd like to say definitely, but I can't say that for definite, can I? Definitely got some kind of stroke flaw going on that's holding you back from accessing the fitness that you've already got. So there's something going on that's an easy fix technically that once you change it, and when you embed that change over a few seconds, you're going to get quicker a lot faster than if you just practice swimming really hard and train as if you were a runner getting into the water. So all that being said, now you're at the point of swimming 1:45s. I think that's usually about the point where you'll really see gains by doing more fitness training. And I don't know exactly why, but it's my feeling that something happens hydrodynamically around the 1:45 per 100 that you've kind of got the body shape in the water to start improving more by swimming more, if you like. So Neil's kind of through that hump already of getting from 2 minutes down to 1:45. And I think is a pretty good guide. If he swims another 50K in March, it wouldn't surprise me to see him down at 1:38 for 100 consistently in another month's time, as long as his mechanics and his arms hold together and he doesn't pick up any kind of injury or niggle. But I always come back to saying, look, I think the best way to go about this is get a good coach to look at your stroke. If you've got access to a video camera, either film yourself or get someone else to film you under the water and have a look yourself at what's actually going on. And if you can afford to see a good swim coach who does video analysis, do that and get someone to say to you, look, you're doing X, Y, and Z. The fix for that is A, B, and C. And then go away and practice those things and you'll progress a lot faster than just by plowing up and down the pool. Okay, but keep us updated, Neil, because it sounds like you've had a massive change in your swimming there. So let's see if you can keep on improving, mate. Good work.
Rob, I genuinely think it took me about 3 years to get from like a, I don't know, was I like a 155 maybe, down to more like a 145?
Yeah, 155, 156. I think maybe the difference here is, reading between the lines, I think maybe Neil last season was a 145 swimmer, and having stopped swimming when he first got back in, he's kind of dropped back to 2 minutes. You know, like you do if you have a period of time out of the pool.
Yeah.
And I think quickly you get that feel for the water back. And, well, obviously it's worked for him, so I'm not going to criticise it. And if you've got the dedication to get in the pool and you enjoy it, I've had periods in my life where I enjoyed nothing more than getting in the pool every day. So good on you, man. It's made a real big improvement. But if you don't keep on seeing those improvements by doing more swimming, I think then's the time to pivot and think, right, I'm going to try something different. Let's get some video analysis done. Let's see a coach. Let's change from swimming lots of long aerobic miles to doing some fast sprinty type stuff. Any kind of change is going to be something that moves you through a plateau, I think.
Totally agree with that one. Can I give my top tip, Rob?
Yeah, go for it.
So my top tip, if you can't get to a club session, is just get a swim buddy who's ideally a tiny bit faster than you.
Yeah.
Seriously.
That has been a really big thing for your swimming this year, hasn't it? Not club swimming, but swimming with another swimmer who you've got a kind of, I'll see you at the pool tomorrow, mate, kind of relationship with.
It's amazing. Yep.
Yeah.
And honestly, the times that I haven't been, it's about 5 seconds per 100 slower.
And do you feel like that's just because you haven't got your buddy there? Do you feel it's like a physical drafting effect? Or is it
no, it's not a drafting.
Kind of it's a psychological getting beasted by Vicky kind of thing.
I think it's a, so we tend to swim side by side rather than like one in front of the
behind
other.
Behind each other. Yeah, okay.
So then when you're swimming side by side and you see that person, like, you're constantly aware of where they are. So if they move a tiny bit ahead of you, you're like, well, that's not happening.
Yeah.
So you're constantly pushing each other.
15 centimetres is a big move in the pool, isn't it?
Oh my God, but it's amazing. It genuinely is. It, for me, this year, it's been a total game changer.
Yeah. And it's going to be what gets you down to that magic number at Ironman Wales later in the year, I think. You're going to get in there not just being a better swimmer and being a fitter swimmer, but being a much more comfortable and confident swimmer, swimming next to somebody, you know, all the psychological stuff that goes with it, being in close contact, not really being bothered if you clash arms, but being comfortable jumping on someone's hip or their toes or pushing someone away a bit. I think that's going to be a big part of the swim at Wales as well.
Yeah, I'm just ignoring any prospect of chop, because chop and pools are a little bit different, aren't they?
No, there's no chance of chop at Ironman Wales.
God, I think I need to start going to a pool with a wave machine. There used to be one near where I grew up. It was great fun, you know, when you're a kid.
It's called the ocean.
It's not on the doorstep.
Drive to the... Yeah, because it must be a 20-minute drive for you to get to the ocean.
Honestly, there used to be a wave machine. Well, there used to be a wave machine in the local pool.
Okay.
Anyway, shut up, Helen. Right. There we go. Should we move on to the interview of the week, Rob?
Yes, interview of the week is with...
I think Rob's been on a bit of coffee, or maybe something stronger. The interview
a little
of
bit
the
jolly
week
today, aren't I?
This week is with Catherine Jameson, who is a pro triathlete. She is the wife of Joel Jameson, who has now retired. But Catherine, in her own right, is an amazing swim biker, and we'll talk a little bit about that in the interview. You'll hear about that. She went to Loughborough Uni as a swimmer, and after many, many years at Loughborough Uni, has sort of emerged as a triathlete. She's racing pro, and this season the big aim is to win a 70.3.
Oh, here we go then. Interview of the week with Catherine Jameson.
Kat Jameson, hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Yes, I'm good, thank you. So tell us a little bit about yourself, because how did you get into triathlon?
Well, I've now been doing triathlon for roughly 7 years, and I sort of got into it by accident. It was it wasn't planned at all. I was at university, where I actually still live now, in Loughborough. I did my degree and my master's degree here, and I chose Loughborough obviously because it had a great course for what I was doing, but also because it had a great swim squad. And I've always swum. My mum sort of got me swimming when I was really young because she couldn't swim, So I've always swum to a decent level, and I came to Loughborough and I was in the high performance squad as a sprint swimmer, a 50 fly, 50 free, 100 fly, 100 free swimmer. And I did my master's degree over 2 years while I worked and swum, and it sort of got to the end of my degree and I had to sort of make that decision as to what I did. Obviously getting a job, I looked at different options and applied for the police because that's what I've always actually wanted to do.
Really?
Yeah, because it's something different and active and not in an office. So I thought, I've always wanted to be in the police. I've no idea why, and maybe in the future that's something I will revisit. But at the time, yeah, I was going out with my now husband, Joel Jameson, who did triathlon professionally. And I was actually just watching him. I was quite good at watching him do races. I used to like it. I used to go away with weekends, you know, nice to Austria and things, and watch him race as a bit of a groupie. But I was watching him at Home Pierpont in the club relays. And I was just hanging out and chatting with the guys from TFN. And we were laughing because Joel's swim is his, he's sort of retired now. His swim was always his weakness. And so we were laughing, and the guys were saying, you know, how obviously I would nail him on the swim. And so we were joking about it all day. And then on the Sunday, there was an individual just sprint race, and they were all going to be there, sort of running the shop and things. And they said, oh, you should do it. And I said, well, I've never done a triathlon, really. You know, I did a couple when I was like young, really young, but nothing serious. And now, I've not really ridden a bike other than my mountain bike that I used to ride to swimming at 5:30 in the morning. It was called Betty. It was very rusty, and moving the saddle, well, that was impossible because it's definitely seized. So that's the only bike I had, and never swum in the sea or open water. So I thought they were sort of kidding me. And then by the end of the day, it appeared not. They'd entered me into the race. They gave me a wetsuit off one of the guys. I used a bike that was quite, well, pretty big, yeah. We had the seat slammed right down. And, I wore my trainers that I just wore in the gym. And I just sort of turned up and did it.
And did you enjoy it, that first one?
Yeah, it's hard to actually remember the feeling. I think I remember feeling very relieved that I finished. I led the swim. And I think I even stayed ahead on the bike. I sort of don't know how. But I did actually do quite a few spin sessions when I was just swimming, because we did it as a bit of cross training. So, now that was okay. But I specifically remember on the run, because you run round the lake and it's only 5K. And I met a few people out on the run who I knew from back in the Lake District. I didn't expect to be there. And I think they were shocked to see me running, as I was as shocked to see them. And I remember the guy at the aid station running next to me, giving me water, because I think he thought I was going to pass out. But, you know, I did the 5K in 25 minutes, which, looking back, you know, I'm quite pleased I got round. So, I was sort of pleased to finish. I didn't win it, you know, but I was probably top five. And it sort of started from there. And Joel just said to me after the race, you know, if you want to give this a go, I'll coach you a little bit. I can advise you on what to do. And, yeah, we sort of just went from there, really.
When did you switch to racing pro after racing age group?
So that was at the sort of nearer the end, well, in sort of summer. And so I sort of thought about this idea for a while. You know, I was still swimming. I was still improving with my swimming. So it was quite a tough sort of transition. But it was definitely the right decision for me to do at the time. And so that following year, I decided to actually start training. And I remember the goal being, Joel set me this goal. I think I told the ladies this when I was down in London the other day. But my goal was to run for an hour without stopping. And, like, I kid you not, running for an hour, like, I thought I could never do it. And I'd just start off by just doing, like, 20-minute jogs and then slowly building up. And then, yeah, slowly I obviously reached my hour goal. And then it became, the goal was, before I could race, I had to be able to run 3 one-hour runs in the week. More so really because coming from a swimming background, we were a little concerned about injury and things like that and like building it up, because I was sort of fit but not running fit. Mm-hmm. So it was just sort of building it up. And that year the age group world champs were in Budapest, and I just sort of decided that I'd try and qualify. So I did Beaver, Belvoir, Castle as my first ever race, really. My first ever proper race. I'm not counting the one at Home Pierpont.
Okay.
It was an Olympic distance, and the weather was terrible. And it went quite well, and I actually qualified on that first race. So I just went on that year to do a couple more. I raced the age group national champs in Bedford, which I won, and did another race in Shropshire. And then I went and did the age group world champs in Budapest, and sort of did quite well. And that's how I moved into racing more professionally.
So that's pretty, quite a quick rise. It's interesting you talking about obviously you did come from this swimming background, and you very much came from a sprint background in swimming. So how did you find having to adapt from those, short, sharp, fast intervals and reps to actually doing the longer stuff at a slightly different pace, I guess?
Yeah, it is strange because obviously people know me as sort of former swimmer on my bike, and it is very different obviously swimming 1500, 1900, anything like that compared to doing the 1500 metres, what I always used to do. But in the later years of when I was swimming, although I was sort of a sprint swimmer and all my main sets were sprint based, my coach at the time here in Loughborough made me start to do a little bit more distance work in training, which I actually think has helped sort of that adaptation. Like in races, he made me start racing 200 free, which at the time I thought was crazy, and I really want long distance racing on the 200. But that helped my sort of sprinting, but also doing the sort of longer stuff in training, I think, eased that transition. And I guess really, my swim actually has helped me turn professional quite quickly, because I sort of only raced as an age grouper for a year. And being based in Loughborough, I'm very lucky in that I was always around really strong Olympic distance athletes, because it's one of the performance centres. And it was Ben Bright, who I've known for quite a while just through swimming, and he offered to coach me. And I guess because he knew that he could see the potential from my swim, that I could be at the front of races.
Yeah.
So it started like that, but I started doing drafting races, which I did for a little while, but then obviously I've just changed now to the more non-drafting side of things.
That's really cool. And the running side of things, I think that's really, really interesting, because I guess as a child, you would have spent so long in the water that you, I don't know, did you do things like cross country as well?
Not in the time I was at uni. So I did my degree over 3 years and my master's degree over 2 years. And in that time, I didn't really do any running that I can remember. I maybe did the odd warm up before a gym session on the treadmill, things like that. But I did, when I was at school, my school was very into sport, so I played a lot of netball, and I was very active as a child, and I did do cross country through school, so I did sort of have a little bit of a running basis.
Yep.
But having not run for so long, and obviously spending so long in the water, it is quite a transition, and it's something I still struggle with now. Like people who know me and see me race know that my run is my weakness, but hopefully, I'm hoping that it's building year on year, and we're trying new things and just working out how to get me sort of faster and stronger.
And what kind of specific stuff are you doing then on your run to get faster and stronger?
Well, originally with my previous coach, I was doing quite a lot of shorter reps, because he sort of believed a lot of it was in my foot speed, which I think it is, but I did quite a lot of 200s and short reps on the track, which improved me to a point, but I think I need to do a lot more sort of race specific sessions, which is the sort of the approach we're taking now. I'm doing some short sort of fartlek sessions, but then like tomorrow I have a session where I'll do so many kilometers at 1k at race pace, and then 1k a bit easier, 1k at race pace, 1k a little easier, and then slowly it's building up to 2k at race pace, 500 meters a bit easier, then 3k. So it slowly builds up. So I'm running, I think we're aiming to run sort of 6k around race pace, in one block, and then maybe a k easy, then do another 6k. So just a case of building it up, because I've got a bit of a tendency to set off too hard and die.
I think a lot of people can relate to that. You kind of think, oh, it's fine, I'm feeling comfortable.
Yeah, I often set off and, you think you're amazing. You think, oh, I feel great. And then sort of just after halfway, you realise that maybe you set off a little bit too quick. But I don't know, this year maybe I'll start picking up my watch in transition, because I never do that. And so maybe that's a good tip for me to take on for myself, to pick up a watch, and so I can actually monitor my pace.
So at the moment, up until now, everything's been on feel on the run?
Yeah, always on feel. Like training's not, obviously, training I train with my Garmin and my heart rate monitor and everything. But yeah, in a race, I tend to race to feel and just try to go with it.
On the bike as well?
No, on the bike, I ride with power. Mm-hmm. I didn't originally, but since being coached by Mark Pierce and then now Joel, my husband, I've always ridden with power. And so there is a bit of a plan on the bike because I do have a tendency to often start off a little hard on the bike as well. So it's a good way to sort of control it. And I think it works well on the longer distances.
Yeah. And Kat, with the longer distance stuff, so obviously you were racing a lot of Olympic. As a pro, there aren't really that many. It's difficult, isn't it, to actually make a living from racing the shorter distance?
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, being a pro is amazing. I've got a great lifestyle. I've got support from amazing people, great sponsors, friends and family, you know, all really supportive. But it is hard to make a living. And it is a lifestyle choice, really. And I do make a living, obviously, doing what I do. But in the shorter distance, when I was doing it drafting in my first few years, I was lucky enough to have a French Grand Prix team, which a lot of the girls do have. It's a great way to sort of get into the sport and get into fast racing as a pro on that sort of level. And they were good because they would pay you a fee. So that was very helpful. But I sort of didn't enjoy that racing. So then when I turned into the non-drafting, I stayed with Olympic distance and really targeted the 5150 series, mm-hmm. which meant traveling, because a lot of them were in America, less in Europe. And then there was the main final, which was the Hy-Vee in Des Moines in Iowa, which paid good money. You know, top 30 qualified after sort of a certain amount of races, you collect points. And then in the final, everyone would win some money, obviously, depending on your finishing position. So that was my target races really for the year, just to survive, because yeah, you've got to pay the bills. So enjoy what you're doing and pay the bills. So
would you like to see more domestic races at the shorter distance, or just generally more international races even at that shorter distance still? Or do you feel in a way that you're sort of forced to step up to 70.3 in Ironman?
Yeah, well, funny you should say that, because I think stepping up again was at the right time for me. I think my style of racing, my swim and my bike suit the 70.3 racing. I probably wouldn't have said that if you asked me 2 years ago before I stepped up. But I had to step up, really, because the 5150 series folded. It was an Ironman sort of based series, and they lost their main sponsor, Hy-Vee, which was a supermarket company in America. And so they couldn't afford to really run those races anymore, even though they were massively well attended, you know, by age groupers and professionals. So, yeah, it would be nice to get some of those Olympic distance races back. And I know there is a lot more of them now in America, just less so in Europe. So I guess that is why I stepped up to doing the half distance, and it means I can race more in Europe without having to travel to America to try and, you know, compete.
And you've targeted quite a few of the challenge races, haven't you?
Yeah, so for my first 2 years, I sort of saw the challenge races as sort of more friendly races. And 2 years ago when I did my first race, I'd been training in Fuerteventura. Which is now, I train out of Playitas, which is one of my sponsors. It's just a lovely place to train with great people. So I decided to do that, the challenge race there, as my first half. And I just enjoyed the experience and the atmosphere, which is sort of why I've stayed with challenge races for the 2 years I've been doing the half distance. And it's been really good. I've really enjoyed all the races that I've done with them. But this year I have bought my Ironman license, so hopefully you'll see me racing some Ironman 70.3s across Europe.
So you'll mix up the two this year, a few challenge and a few Ironman.
Yeah. It's my goal this year isn't to qualify for Chattanooga. It's more just because some of the races for the 70.3 Ironman fall better in my race calendar. Yep. So it sort of made sense doing them branching out a little bit, because I've had great results on the challenge scene, but I actually think, well, Joel also thinks that there's a lot more coverage and you get a lot more publicity through the Ironman races, which I really don't know why, because the challenge races are just as good and popular. So it's a good way for me to race and hopefully raise my profile a little bit.
Who do you train with on a regular basis then, if you're still in Loughborough?
Well, Jodie's here, which is really nice, Jodie Stimson. So when I can, I train with her. But I actually spend quite a lot of time training with guys. And so I'll train with, like, I've been biking and swimming with Lawrence Vanous, who's a Jordanian athlete. He just competed in the Olympics this year. He's really, really good to train with. He's a strong swimmer. So I sort of hop in and try and do things with him. And then I run just with a running group here based in Loughborough. But if I can't sort of find people to train with, I do just crack on and do it on my own, which I'm quite good at doing.
Do you prefer it in a group, though, or with other friends?
I do, yeah, especially for things like the long, steady rides. I think having people around you and people to train with, that's really good. And for swimming, coming from a sort of swimmer squad background, I'm used to having people there to swim with. Like, I can hop in and swim on my own any day of the week, but it makes it so much more enjoyable knowing that you're going to go and meet someone. And I'm very flexible nowadays with my swimming. You know, if I sort of, I know there's a group swimming, I don't mind too much what the session is anymore, as long as I know, like, that they always want to swim hard at certain times in the week, so I'll just join in with whatever they're doing and know that maybe I'm having a recovery swim or a hard swim just based on what they're doing. So I'm quite flexible with my swimming, which makes it easier for me just to join in with the different groups that are here.
And you mentioned doing a little bit of training with the guys. Is that a conscious decision to basically just try to always improve and, you know, train with people on the bike who are potentially faster than you?
Yeah, that is one reason for sure. And it, in the past, it's always helped. But I think maybe until Jodie came here, Loughborough's quite a male-dominated sort of area. There are, like, strong girls here now, obviously. So Cordwell's here and other girls. But sort of at my age, sort of about around my age range, it's mainly the guys. So, and I've known them for a long time, so it's quite easy for me to tag on and, you know, just join them. And they don't seem to be any easier on me. You know, I don't get to just sit at the back and sort of roll along. You know, I sort of take my turn in a group, and which is good. And it's easy because we can chat and we've known each other for so long. It makes the rides go really quickly. But you know, if I'm doing a session, I do tend just to say either I'll maybe warm up with them and then do my session, or I'll just carry on and do my session on my own.
And what does a typical week look like for you, would you say? Talk us through a typical week in terms of training.
Oh, it's at the moment it's a little varied because I've had sort of 2 weeks fairly easy after coming back from a training camp. Typically, I'll have, this is sort of a very general week, I'll swim 5 times a week. 2 of them will be relatively hard and 1 of them will be like a sprint base. One of them will be more of a threshold set, and 1 of them will be sort of aerobic longer reps. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's sort of 3 main sessions. Then there'll be 2 other sessions in there. Sort of varies as to what that'll be. On the bike, I'll ride 5 to 6 days a week. When I'm away, I'm getting quite a lot of riding in just because the weather's better. So generally anywhere between 2 to 4, 4.5 hours. And I'll have roughly 2 sessions, generally 2 sessions a week. One of them being shorter, say 3-minute hill reps, or what I talked about the other day, I do this thing called a map ride, where it's blocks of 10 to 20 minutes at a time, riding 30 seconds really hard, 30 seconds easy, or 40 seconds hard, 20 seconds easy. So sort of shorter work really. And then I'll do some longer efforts, a bit more controlled around race pace, maybe with a few bits where I have to pick it up, but generally longer reps. And then run sessions, again I'm doing sort of two main run sessions a week, again a bit of sort of following the bike. I do some shorter reps, so it's like 5 800 meter reps. And then I'll do longer, anywhere between Ks to 3K sort of reps. And some days I'll be running off the bike. So I might ride and then do just the first 20 minutes at race pace, and then the rest of it sort of steady. So, but it does vary quite a lot. Like, I'm not strict on my week. I think that's the one advantage of being able to do this full time, is that I can be quite flexible on what I do. And with Joel coaching me, he can see how I feel and he monitors my training quite well, so he can sort of adapt things depending on sort of what he thinks is the right thing to do.
Do you have a never-ending washing machine in action?
Yes, it is awful. Literally before talking to you, I got off the turbo and I've just thrown everything straight into the washing machine. But it's slightly better now because Joel's not doing a triathlon. He's like retired at the end of last year. He's just running, which really cuts down on the washing. So you can maybe put it on once a day instead of twice a day, because in winter, like this time last year, I remember if we were both out riding, you know, you can easily fill the washing machine with really dirty kit. So I guess it is a little better.
And when you were both training at the same time and both sort of living the pro lifestyle, was sometimes it quite difficult to basically be husband and wife and training as well and everything?
Yeah, there's definitely times, like even now it can still be hard, because I think until you have your other half coach you, it's a bit of a strange dynamic, especially at first. Like we try to plan meetings, so we try to have it as a separate sort of side to the relationship. So maybe we'll say, you know, okay, we need to discuss something, so we'll go out for coffee and have a proper meeting sort of thing about it. But it's a little better now, because before it was hard, we were both trying to do it professionally and you just get tired. And we spent a lot of time together. Often I'd jump on his rides and ride with him as well, so he never got any peace, because I used to say, oh, I don't want to ride on my own, so I'll just ride with you. And he was probably thinking, I just want to escape and get away and ride on my own. We never really run together. Every now and then he'll come and do an easy jog with me. We call it a yog, when we go yogging together.
Sounds so romantic.
Go for a little yog down the road. So, it's sort of different dynamic now. Like, Joel's much more relaxed about training. He's not really riding his bike too much, although he's actually at the moment, because he's away in Mallorca running a training camp, so he's riding his bike. But since he raced at the end of summer last year, I've not convinced him to come out on any rides with me. And swimming is a definite no-no, so it's not even worth me asking.
It's amazing, isn't it, how, you know, as a pro, you sort of are programmed essentially to do everything, and then when you can let, you know, if you're not from a swimming background or something, and you can let it go, it's like, yeah, doesn't matter about that anymore.
Like he'll get in the sea. Like, if I said to him, right, I'm going to go, it's a horrible day, but I'm going to go and get in the sea today, you know, he'd be really up for it. But if I ask him to just nip down the pool with me, I don't think I'd ever get him back in the water. He says that one day he will start swimming, maybe just for fun and for fitness, but I think he's been scarred by, you know, trying to swim for so long that, you know, it's hard to get that back. And he's got a real love for the outdoors, so running is much more appealing to him these days.
Amazing. So in terms of your race season this year then, first up is it Challenge Gran Canaria in a few weeks' time?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I'm quite looking forward to it, actually. It's run by the same organiser that ran Challenge Fuerteventura. So, and I've never been to Gran Canaria, so it'll be quite a cool experience to go there and race. I guess the aim for that race this year is just to see how training's gone and see where I am. I've had a bit of a tendency on the last sort of 2 years to be fit quite early. I've raced quite well in sort of May, June time. And this year, I'd like to obviously race well then. I'm not saying I don't want to race well then, but I want my key races, you know, my fitness to improve more as the year goes on. So I start off in Gran Canaria, and then I'm going to head to 70.3 Barcelona, which will be really nice. And the week after Barcelona is Challenge Salou. So I thought while I'm there, I'll just do both.
Why not?
Yeah, so I thought, you know, maybe I'll have a few sangrias while I'm out there, a bit of a relax, and I won't have to do too much between the two races, I'm guessing. So, and they're so close to each other that it seems silly for me not to be there and do them both. So that's sort of my first three races of this year.
And the big aim is to win one of those bad boys?
Yeah, I keep getting really close and falling at the last hurdle. Like, the amount of races last year, I was leading until the sort of final so many kilometres on the run. It gets a bit hard at the end, you know, to sort of keep just getting beaten. So, yeah, a win at any of them would be great. My main goal, actually, this year is to be selected again for the ITU World Long Distance Champs. I went last year. It was the longest race I've ever done, and it was a real learning curve. So I think this year I can, if I get selected, I can go and race with more knowledge, just put together a better race.
How did you find Oklahoma? I don't mean the place, I actually mean the race. If it was the longest one you'd ever done, how did you find it as like as a whole experience as well?
It was, I imagined it to be hard and it didn't disappoint. It was a great race. It was so well organized and everyone was amazing. I had an amazing homestay out there who are great friends now. But the race itself, I guess I underestimated the humidity of Oklahoma. I think any of the athletes, especially the British athletes who went out there, because there was quite a few age group athletes out there as well. Yeah, the humidity, it was so humid. Like it was around 30 degrees on race day, but about 98% humidity. And so you see people, like in the days before, I'd go out for a 20-minute jog and I'd come back and I looked like I'd just gone swimming. You know, it's just, it was so hot. And ironically, we swim in a lake. And again, it was probably the roughest swim I'd done. It's like it was rougher than any sea swim. And you literally couldn't see the buoys. It was very, very bizarre. And it was quite long, which worked well for me. So it's a 4K swim. And then heading out on the bike, it was 120K. Which is a bit of a big step up, really, from the normal 90K. I'd been up in my riding, so I knew I could ride that distance, but I underestimated how much I needed to drink. I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like I decided in the days leading up to it, this wasn't in the original plan, I decided that I wanted to carry 3 bottles, which I would never normally do, and I was adamant that one of the bottles was going to be Coke. Just because any run I'd done previously while I was there, just in the lead up, I was just so thirsty that I thought, I have high five in my bottle, but I just wanted something that was sort of fizzy or, you know, something to quench my thirst. And so I carried a whole bottle of Coke and then I carried energy in my other 2 bottles. But yeah, I think I went through about 7 bottles on the bike, which was quite a lot. And then on the run again, it was just a case of trying to pick up as much fluid as possible.
And so this year it's going to be in Penticton, right?
Yeah, in Penticton in Canada.
It can get very hot there in the summer. How do you know if you've qualified? What do you have to do to qualify for it?
So there is criteria. I've already sort of said that I'd like to race. And I guess the criteria I haven't received yet, but it'll be very similar to last year. So it'll be based on my racing. They generally look at 2 years. So looking at how I did in Oklahoma last year, where I finished 9th. But, you know, I was actually very much in the race last year. So I hope that gets taken into account a little bit. And then my positions this year in 70.3 races and the challenge and the Ironman races and things like that, I hope that'll all be taken into account. And then it'll just be a decision by British Triathlon.
Do you see yourself perhaps in a couple of years doing full long distance races?
Well, many people ask me this, and at the moment I don't. I would like to give it a go to say I've done it, and I know basically that I could complete the race, but at the moment I wouldn't be able to do it justice, if that makes any sense at all. I'm fit enough to go out now and do the distance, but the run especially really scares me. Like running a marathon after riding and swimming that long, I admire anyone who does that. So, and I've never run a marathon ever, not even just on a run. And 30K in Oklahoma felt a long way. So maybe ask me again after you give me a few drinks. Maybe in the future. I would like to say I'll be willing to give one a go, but I just at the moment I haven't nailed my 70.3 racing, which I know I have, like I've got the ability to do, and I just need a couple of races I think where I can actually feel like I've achieved what I want to achieve, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you find in the latter stages of the run at the moment, do you have a few mental demons sort of getting at you as well?
Yeah, I probably say that is the case. And it's something that I think I do struggle with anyway. Ironically, I did my master's degree in sports psychology, and I'm probably not very good at taking my own advice. But yeah,
Nobody is. It's okay.
No, I know. I think I lack a bit of belief sometimes. And in the past, I know on the run, I've sort of, it's been a bit like I'm waiting for people to catch me. You know, I know they're probably running quicker than I am. And I'm sort of, it's as if I'm trying to hold on. And I think I just need to go into it believing that, you know, I can stay ahead, which is where it goes back to the sort of run sessions that I'm doing now. You know, just holding, maintaining sort of the pace that I know I want to hold. And I guess hopefully by doing that in training, it's given me the belief that I can do it. And, you know, it'll help me through the race.
I think there's so much on the mental side of things, isn't there, that we can all learn and improve on?
Yeah, definitely. It's really hard, and it only takes one or two sort of races that you consider to be bad races, I think, to sort of have an effect. And I think even the most confident athletes still suffer at times, you know, with negative thoughts. And ultimately, it's those people who deal with it best who have the better races. So I think, you know, you've got to practice it in training as much as anything else. And you've got to believe, I think, in training that you can do it and that you're strong enough to do it. And that all helps. And putting it into the race is just a bit easier.
Do you pick the brains of the likes of Jodie now that she's, you know, in Loughborough? And can you pick her brain?
Not too much, really. I must admit, I talk to Anya quite a lot because she's very similar to me. I think we can both be a little bit soft. And, you know, she said in the lead up towards Kona when she came fourth, I think she, you know, she's got such a great ability, and it was the mental side. And I think she worked on it, and, you know, just visualising the race and sort of visualising doing well and, you know, believing in it is what she said helped her ultimately, you know, sort of crack it. And it's easy to crumble, and it's only you who can stop yourself crumbling. So I think it's just, you know, you really got to work on it, I think, and try to put it into practice.
It's like that fifth or sixth discipline, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is just trying to fit it in and get it right. And, you know, a lot of the time after you've done a session and training, the one thing you want to do is just relax. You don't want to then think about the race. And I do think about my races, usually sort of in the lead up to them, so the days before I'm then thinking about them. But I think the key is to put that mental practice into sort of action when you're in sessions.
Would you have one tip for age groupers generally when it comes to triathlon and training or any aspect of it, a little tip?
Yeah, well, I gave a tip at the Women in Triathlon event, and I think my tip was the best because it involved eating nice cakes, because that's what I do. I tried to set myself mini goals and give myself treats. I'm a big believer in a balanced diet, and that doesn't mean cutting out the things that you enjoy eating. So, you know, I tried to set myself like little goals for sessions or like a longer term goal, and then I had an all right turbo session. So, you know, if I feel like something, a little treat later on, you know, I think, well, I had a good turbo session, give myself a little treat. But I think the main key tip really is to keep it simple and keep it fun. And if you can do it with friends or with a group, a squad, you know, people you work with, it just makes it easier. And especially if you're getting up early in the morning to go running before work, or having to come back after work, you know, a full day at work when I know a lot of people are really tired, and going out for the run isn't always the most appealing in the dark if the weather's not too good. But if you know you're meeting people, a friend, just to have a nice chat and a run, I think that's how, I think it's a great way to get into triathlon and do it.
Brilliant. Final question. You've obviously, now you're doing it all as a pro, you obviously get a little bit of support along the way, and you're a member of Team Pedal Cover, aren't you? Tell us a bit about what that means to you for having their support.
Oh, well, you know, I couldn't do it without the support I've got. I've got some amazing sponsors. Sato is my bike sponsor. They're an Italian-based company. They make my time trial bike, and it's all specifically made for me. I get handmade wheels from Spin Industries. I get my nutrition through Blue 70. No, that's my swimming. That would be interesting. I get my nutrition through High Five, ride ISN saddles. I'm a member of ASICS and ASICS Front Runner. And Pedal Cover are obviously my main sponsor, my main support, and they're just an amazing company. They do home insurance, bike insurance, and they're very unique because they cover you worldwide. They cover your actual value of your bike, and they cover you in races and, you know, when things are in transition. They're just generally, you know, they're passionate about what they do and they want to help, and they really support many pro athletes.
Fab. So there we go. We can say thank you to the people that support you. That's awesome. Yeah. Kat, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Really enjoyed it.
Rob, I really enjoyed doing that interview.
Yeah, she's fun.
And I tell you, the bit there where we were talking about the mental side of things towards the end of it, I think we can all take a lot from that because, you know, how often is it? Even I had the other day, at the last mile of the half marathon I was doing, you know, I got ran down by, I think, two women. Definitely one came past me in the last little bit. And I guess I've been on the other side of that, chasing other people down in the last little bit. And I think there is a lot of mental games going on at that point. And, you know, if you sort of think that if you're really confident and you're feeling really good, no one's going to come past you. Yeah, if
it's
suddenly,
all mental.
It is, isn't it?
It's all mental at that point. Your physical body is simply a projection of your mind carrying your consciousness forward. It's all mental at that point. I'm more and more convinced of it. And this leads on from what we were talking about last week, doesn't it?
Mm.
About the mental effects of working with a coach and working with another person. I'm absolutely convinced that the mind is leading the body with all of this stuff these days. And training is simply a part of training your brain to accept your body can do more than you currently accept it can do.
Yeah. Well, so I just thought that bit of it was really, really interesting. And I know she's been working really hard, as she says in it, on her running to, you know, hopefully stop that being chased down towards the end of it, because she's such a strong swimmer. She, you know, was training with the national squads in Loughborough, and she's a really, really strong biker as well. So it'll be brilliant to see it all come together for her.
Yeah, cool. And she was part of your Women in Triathlon panel down in London last week, wasn't she? How did that go?
Oh, Rob, it was amazing.
Pics look great. You were all glam. I was very impressed. You were all glammed up, mate.
I wasn't glam.
All right, you weren't wearing running kit.
I wasn't in running kit. I think there's a difference. I was in jeans and a top. Definitely not glam. And
it just goes to show what passes for glam in my world, doesn't it?
Should I tell you what was quite funny? Someone had taken a photo of me, and you can see... It's quite funny. You can see the tongue of concentration. Do you do that? Do you ever concentrate and you stick your tongue out?
Poking your tongue out the front. I apparently look really angry. That's my concentrating face.
Yes.
I've got like a really angry face when I'm concentrating. I'm not angry, honestly.
I'm with you. People always say, oh, you look really annoyed. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm just concentrating. And probably my tongue is stuck out at the same time because I am concentrating. Anyway, let me tell you, Rob, it was brilliant. So it was a Women Who Try event, and it was... at the giant bike store at St. Paul's. And
it looked awesome. The venue looked amazing, I've got to say.
Oh, it's one of the biggest bike shops in the UK, so it was really cool. And they had different wetsuit brands, and then they had running shoe brands there as well. And they had just loads of cool people. So we had a panel of 9 women, which was like Eddie Brocklesby and Catherine Jameson and Ruth Purbrook and Jane Hansom, and I'm going to forget people, but there was Georgie
Rutherford.
You did
Rutherford, right, you got 5 there.
Heather Sellers, yeah. Jennifer Tate, and then live on video link to Steph Hansen of Wits Up.
Australia. Was really professional. She was on video and you talked to her there.
Yep, so we talked to Steph as well, which was brilliant. And so
Isn't
we did.
It's amazing what you can do with technology these days.
Oh, it was
That's
really,
like
really
the
cool.
kind of thing you'd have seen on telly a few years ago.
I think she struggled to hear things because. But anyway, we made it work. It was really cool. And it was about an hour long Q&A. So I was asking the panel questions. And then towards the end, we had questions from the floor as well. So people were just really inspired, I think, by some of the stories. And, you know, you hear sort of Eddie Brocklesby saying that she didn't do her first triathlon until her late 50s, and she couldn't really swim, and at 72 she's, you know, Great Britain's oldest female to have finished an Ironman. It's just pretty inspiring. And then the likes of Ruth and Jane mixing work with competing at a high level in their age group.
And yeah, the highest level.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the, you know, the stories of Heather and Georgie and Catherine, who, oh, I forgot, Gillian Sanders, the South African ITU athlete as well. She was there. She was so cool too. And she was just really good fun. And they were all saying, you know, I asked them all for a tip towards the end. And so different tips, but the main thing was just enjoy it and have fun. And I think we've said that so often on this podcast, that we do this for fun. Don't forget that.
There's a lot of fun going on here tonight. We're having a good time.
So basically,
I'm so glad it was really good.
It was fab.
I actually was looking at it and going, I wish I could be there. It was that kind of event. I was thinking, I wish I could have been there to lend you moral support and clap in the crowd and stuff. It looked amazing.
Oh, well, there were over 100 people turned up.
That's awesome.
Yep. So, and it was one of those things, Rob, it was one of those things that it's quite scary, you know, standing up in front of a room of strangers that you never really met many of them. So, yeah, that was kind of cool as well. Actually, a bit like standing on the start line of a triathlon thinking, oh, what am I doing? This is a bit scary, isn't it?
So you stepped out of your comfort zone. Did you get a big buzz off it afterwards, though?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And a buzz of actually...
Yeah, that's coming across in the way you're talking about it.
Sort of passion thing shining through.
Yeah.
But even complete beginners coming up to you saying, I'm really scared about doing my first triathlon. And you're like, right, okay, what are you scared about? And then talking through, you know, transition doesn't actually have to be that scary. But again, you know, go back to your first triathlon.
It's just getting dressed quickly, isn't it, at the end of the day?
But I just remember being absolutely just wetting myself at the thought of it all in, you know, being scared about it.
Yeah.
So it was really cool to almost give mainly women that were there, you know, the confidence to walk out of those doors and think, yeah, I can do this. Brilliant. Yep.
Brilliant.
That was cool.
Changed a life, Helen.
I don't think so, but watch this space for
well,
hopefully...
Well, you never know, mate. You never know. You get hold of one little starfish and chuck it back in the water. Done a good job for the day.
Well, there you go. It was cool. That's what we want to say. And I think Try 24/7 will have, you know, an article up about it in the very near future.
Brilliant. Really cool stuff. And do you know what? That links nicely onto this one, because God bless them. They tweeted out about the charity appeal for us as well, unbidden and unasked, which I thought was really kind of them. And that probably brought my donations in as well. So good on them for doing that. And also the editor made the donation, bless him. Isn't that cool?
John and Paul are good guys, definitely.
Yeah. Certainly are. So we'll just wrap this up with a massive thank you to everybody who donated to the charity appeal. It's technically still open at the moment. It's going to be open for the next couple of days until I officially close it down, in case of anyone who missed out, because I got a couple of worried people saying, oh, I meant to make a donation and I forgot, will you leave it open, which was really cool. But do you know what, Hels, the official total as we speak at the moment is just over £2,350, including the offline donations. Isn't that amazing?
That's really, really good. I'm so happy for you.
It's just brilliant. It's just about $3,000, which I think is absolutely brilliant. And I'm so thankful to everyone who's made a donation, and so thankful to all the people who kindly donated kit or time or product or money vouchers or whatever it was for the prize draw. It was a massive project to try and get pull this together, as you know, and we weren't sure how it was going to be received, and you listeners have been absolutely amazing, and you've made a massive difference to the family of my friend. So thank you all very much. I've decided what I'm going to do, Hels, is a separate podcast episode with a live drawing. What do you think of that? So I'm going to I'm going to get all the names and stuff and put them into the hat and then draw each item. And then just if people are interested, they can listen. And obviously, if you're not interested, I hope it's not like somebody's first listen to the podcast. Like, what is this show? But rather than do it in and amongst the show, I'll do it as a separate thing. And I'll get that recorded towards the back end of this week. And it can go out after next week's episode. So we'll give time for this episode to go out, and anyone who hasn't made a donation but meant to and hasn't quite done yet has still got a chance to do that. So thanks very much, everybody, again, and thanks for your support, Hells. You've been brill.
And the address, Rob, just in case there are any last-minute donations.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, it'd be good to mention that. It's justgiving.com/crowdfunding/podcast.
There you go. Awesome. I'm all so right. Happy for you. And Rob, do Moose's family, do they know yet?
No, they don't know yet.
Oh.
Well, maybe they know about the web address, but I imagine they've forgotten all about it because I haven't contacted Kate since, yeah, it was probably December, I think. So, yeah, isn't that funny?
Oh, I imagine.
Yeah, I'm going to send her an email either tomorrow or the day after and say, guess what? I hope she's forgotten all about it.
That'll be... Oh, though, imagine getting that.
Yeah.
She'll probably be crying.
Sweet.
A lot.
Done some good for the world. Thanks, everybody. Right, that seems like a good place to wrap it up for the night, doesn't it?
I think it does. Just one more thing that we should mention is Triathlon X, which is the world's toughest iron distance race. If you're sort of a fairly new listener, then go back onto iTunes or onto the Oxygen Addict website and go back through a whole load of episodes, because around about June last year, Rob did Triathlon X and he recorded all the way around, and it's really quite cool to listen to. So yeah, anyway, if you want to do that race this year, so get a taste for it by listening to Rob's podcast, you can get a £100 discount on your entry fee with the code Oxygen 100.
Yes, it's more likely to put people off entering, I think, isn't it, than actually encourage them to do so.
No, it just depends how crazy a race you want to do, doesn't it?
It's a certain kind of mindset wants to go and do that, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's definitely. Yeah.
And Rob, I want to say one other thing, which is hello to Kat, who I met the other day, and she says she listened to the podcast. So hello to Kat, who I met at Giant Simples.
And we should also mention, if you want to enter the Holcombe Half Triathlon, you can get a free t-shirt, can you? Can you remember the code?
Free male tee and free female tee.
There you go. So you can enter that as well. All right, brilliant. So you've been listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. Our sponsors have been Triathlon X, Team Oxygen Addict, and tgstore.co.uk. Thanks very much for listening. Have a great and inspirational training and racing week until we talk to you again. I'm Coach Rob Wilby.
I'm Helen Murray.
And yeah, thanks very much for listening. See ya.